Welcome to a new episode of the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Gianluca Sala, your host. In this episode, I chat with Lance-Pierre de Toy. Lance is a former player on the ITF World Tour circuit. He comes from Somerset West, just outside Cape Town, South Africa, where I'm based as well, where I live as well. He talks to us about his journey in tennis, being a junior in Cape Town and playing all the local tournaments, and then also going to train at the Anthony Harris Tennis Academy in Sea Point, Cape Town. And he talks to us about his journey and all the challenges that young players that are trying to go pro face. As we all know, it's a really tough journey, and I think he was great and opening up and talking about all the great things, but also all the challenges that face players. So it's a really interesting episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Ciao, ciao.
Hey, Gianluca. Good, thanks. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thanks. Fine, everything fine. Thanks for coming on the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast, the show, at such short notice. Today's guest is Lance-Pierre de Toy. He is a former player on the ITF Pro Circuit, Pro Tour, and you also had an ATP singles ranking around 750, if I'm correct, yeah. And an ITF ranking around 450, plus minus. You were also a very good junior player as well. But the reason I wanted to speak to you and have you on the show was, apart from being one of the better players, South African players of the past few years, I wanted to find out from you about, you know, playing the tour and the challenges that a South African player who's trying to break into the professional tennis world faces. So I thought it would be a very interesting discussion.
Yeah.
there's a lot to talk about. But I think to start off with, Lance, if you maybe can just give us a brief sort of summary of how you got into tennis and your tennis journey.
Cool. Yeah. So I actually started very young. I think I started at the age of 4 or 5. Basically, I think it's my mom that got me into it or whatever. And I was doing a lot of sports. So I was quite talented with ball sports, and I was cycling a lot and riding bike and doing whatever I could. So I was always very sporty and stuff. And then I think at the age of around 10, 11, 12, around there, tennis started becoming almost one of the only things I started focusing on. So,
okay. Were you from Stellenbosch? Or have you lived here all your life, Somerset West?
Somerset West.
Yeah. Somerset West, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was playing local, and I was just playing with the guys that are here. I didn't really have a coach at the time. My mom was hitting balls with me, and I met Andre, and Andre van der Merwe, and he was actually my first, one of my first proper coaches, and he started taking me, helping me a lot, supporting me, covering most of the big costs which you would normally pay at an academy, so that made it possible for me to actually train the amount of hours that I should.
Andre's a very, very nice guy. Yeah. So I didn't know that he was the first person to coach you. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and also at the time he was still working and stuff, so it wasn't really like a job he took on, if I can put it that way. It was more of we built a relationship and we practiced every afternoon or whatever when he has time. Sometimes he would just put me against the wall and I would hit against the wall or follow his instructions or whatever while he had to go do something. So it wasn't like a very formal thing at the beginning. And I think when he started working a little bit less and stuff, then a few more kids joined and we actually had a little group going at some stage. So yeah, most of my junior career was with him. Like if I can say South African junior career before I started playing international. And then at the age of, I think it's when I turned 16, I've known Anthony Harris for a very long time, like since I was way younger, and we would always speak and stuff if I see him at a tournament, but we never really discussed anything that I could come there and stuff until I was about 16.
Okay,
And
sorry to interrupt you.
yeah.
Anthony Harris is a coach who I actually don't, well, I know him, but I don't know him personally. He's got a academy in Sea Point in Cape Town, not far from where we are in Somerset West. And yeah, it's a very, it's an excellent academy with lots of great players. And currently, I think he's also coaching Lloyd Harris, which has recently broke into the top 100. Yeah, that's just cool.
So I mean, me and Andre decided sort of together that it's better for me to maybe go to Anthony, and I spoke to Anthony and Andre spoke to Anthony, and so it wasn't like a it was all like almost, how can I say, everyone was happy, and I was extremely happy because I was in this like amazing facility and I was training with Lloyd and training with a bunch of other, like 10 other kids that were mostly older than me, all in good college schools or either heading to college or trying to play pro. So I was put in a really good environment.
So
And
just to step back,
yeah.
so did you not go to, so did you go, like, at what age did you decide to do this? And were you still sort of going to school, or were you, I don't know, homeschooling, or what were you doing?
Yeah, so that was at the age of 16. So I finished my primary school homeschooling for 2 years, so grade 6 and grade 7. Then I went to high school, but I started traveling a little bit more in high school, obviously, like just starting to play ITF juniors a little bit and those things, but not really with any structure, if I can put it that way. And but school was always like sort of in the way, you know. There were always complications with catching up, having to catch up work and all those things. So when I went to Antonym, I started homeschooling again. And obviously going then into tennis full time again, it was the only thing I did. Schoolwork as well, obviously. And then
And that was about 16 years old. You were about 16.
And then I really got some proper direction, and helped me a lot just with so many things, just putting besides the tennis, just getting structure with planning how we should play, when I should play, what I should play, and all those things. So I think, which also made a massive difference, because I've never even I barely knew how the whole ITF system works. And yeah, it was super cool. So all of a sudden, everything was almost planned. It was before me on paper. I could see, okay, well, I'm doing this today. I'm doing this month. And
Was a lot
then,
more professional.
so everything was like almost set out and planned. And I was like, wow, if I was thinking to myself, I remember thinking to myself, like, if I had this or this type of like goal setting and plans and everything, I was like, yes, I should have been here since I was 2 years old. But
So that, do you think maybe you started that too late? Is that what you're saying?
In a way, yes. But also in another way, I think all the situations that I went through and everything that I did almost had a little contribution. So it, okay. I mean, it could either went, would have went two ways, you know, so it would have been maybe better for me, but in another way, some of the other things might have not been there, if I can put it that way. I think about it often, and I, but you can never almost think in that way, because you know, you don't know what would have happened
But now, I mean, I've got so many questions now that are popping up in my mind. At 16, let's say more or less that age, did you already know you were very good? What type of tournaments were you doing? Were you just doing the Tennis South Africa? Were you already traveling for ITFs? What was your goal at 16? To become a pro or to go to a college? Or, I mean, what was going on in your mind then?
So college was never an option for me at the beginning, because the only thing that's on a young child's mind, I think, is I want to play pro, you know, but you don't really know what it takes. So the level of my tennis was, I would say, under 14s, I was one of the best in the country. I was also number one at a stage. And when I entered under 16s, it was like, It was a really strange time almost. I didn't really know about tournaments. It was like I started playing ITFs, but I couldn't win a match, and I didn't really I didn't see Andre that much. So it was almost like I was sort of on my own, trying to do my own thing. But I'm like 16 years old, you know, and I had no direction. So I think I always said, yes, I want to play pro, but I never really knew what it takes until then. Obviously, I saw Ant, and then I knew what it takes, and I heard about college, and I heard about all these different options actually in the tennis world, and then actually I sort of understood more of what it takes, you know. And we sat down, and Ant said, listen, if you want to think about playing pro, like, this is what you have to do. This is what you have to do. This is what your ranking has to be by the end of then. So, and what I was told at the time is I'm far behind, you know? So in my mind, I was thinking I was one of the top in SA and stuff. But when I got there, I heard like, okay, I'm far behind. We're going to have to put in way more work and all these things. So, yeah.
Okay. And at that time, you still hadn't played any international tournaments?
No, I played local ITFs, but not really. So I played all the local ITFs, like Johannesburg, Cape Town, Namibia, maybe once or twice. And then, I think in the following year only I went to. But then since I started playing actually like more structurally, like only on the ITF, was in my first year 18s, and I only played 6 months. So I actually didn't play much juniors.
Okay, I see. Yeah. Okay, interesting. All right. Okay, yeah, so it's quite an interesting journey. So then you started playing, obviously, full-time, and so you kind of skipped a bit the junior ITFs, which, I mean, I don't know, I hear so many stories. I mean, there are some people who say it's important, some people who say it's not that important, but
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I guess everybody's got its own way of approaching it. But then, so you started playing 18, and then what happened? Let's continue from there.
Yeah. Also, I think if I just have to say one more thing about the juniors, so generally almost a player would, if you can put it that way, prove himself in the juniors, you know, like everyone mostly gets spotted in the juniors. It's where you can get an opportunity to go play the junior grand slams and stuff. And what happened with me is because I started playing so late, I was actually the only player at the time at Ant and them, traveling on the junior circuit. So, and all that, there were like seven other guys traveling on the pro circuit. So I was basically all alone, and I couldn't take a coach. So
I
he
see.
almost said, like, I'm not going to play the slams the following year because my ranking is not high enough. It's putting a lot of pressure on me to make a lot of good results, and it's a little bit unrealistic. So why don't I just travel with the pros and we can split the coaching fee and I'll have coach and whatever, and
Okay.
rather take that route.
I see. So you didn't really have much of an option. Let's put it that way. Your option was, you went that route, and I imagine also financially, probably a bit easier as well.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah,
That
because I
was
think
my,
you
that was
were
the biggest reason.
the biggest reason. Yeah, you were telling me the other day, that was a very important reason. I think it's important to say, because I mean, everybody knows this anyway. Tennis, especially the higher the level, the more expensive it becomes, and it can be incredibly expensive. So it's a plays a huge part in the development or the decision to which route to go.
Yes, for sure.
But that's interesting, because I mean, I've in my people that I've spoken to that have been coaches, and especially overseas, etc., a lot of them actually swear by, if you decide to go a pro route, just throw yourself directly into futures. Don't even bother with ITFs. I know there's going to be a lot of people who will say, no, it's not necessarily true, but quite a lot of people I know, important coaches, have kind of said that, by the time you're 17, 18, you should be playing futures. So when did you started playing those kind of tournaments?
It's a whole different game, and I know a lot of Europeans are like or more like that, heading in that direction. But anyways, I started playing pros at 17, I think. I went on my first trip was to Turkey with another guy at the academy. And so that was my first year and well, tournament, I would say. It was in December. That was still when I was first year juniors, and then my second year juniors, obviously I didn't play, but then I started playing futures. And unexpected, it started going way better than we thought. And on my second or third trip, I started making my first points, beating few decent players like 700 ATP. So it was really not something that we expected almost to happen, I think, so quick. And I was, I was a little bit shocked myself, to be honest, because we get in such a mentality in South Africa of if you make one ATP point, it's like this amazing thing, So I was almost like, wow, I don't know if I have the level to make an ATP point, because I was even struggling so much in qualies and I couldn't get through qualies. And then all of a sudden, like, I did it and I was like, whoa, but this is so hard. Like, I think I can make another one. And yeah, so I gained a couple of points. I think I had like 5 or 6 points at the time. And that was, I was playing for about 4 months or so. And, or let's say 4 or 5 months. And then on the next trip that year, I went to Turkey and I broke my ankle. And I was, and as soon as, I mean, as soon as I'm doing like better than ever and starting to gain a few points and starting to compete at futures level, I broke my ankle and I was out again for 5 or 6 months. So that whole year for me was basically it almost.
When was that? 2018.
That was in 2017.
Oh, okay. How old were you then?
I was 18.
18. Okay. All right. So you're already doing pretty well at 18. Okay.
Yeah,
And
well, I mean,
then.
if you say pretty well, not pretty well. I think if you look, but I was making like, I think I made
Progress.
6 points or whatever, and it put me number one under 18, and it put me like, I think, the fourth or third singles player in South Africa. So, yeah.
Okay, going back to what you said before, I just wanted to maybe if you can elaborate a bit. You said the futures circuit, or call it the ITF Pro circuit, was a completely different sort of world to the juniors. What in just maybe elaborate on that. What in what way?
So, to me, it felt almost, in a sense, you've got half of the players super professional, either coming out of juniors or they were like top 200 and just fell like 100 spots or whatever, and they have to play futures again. But all these players are like with coach, you know, and like good juniors. And then you get the other half, which are like totally unprofessional and actually just, I mean, traveling and playing and traveling alone, and sort of like been in futures for a couple of years. Whereas in, I think in the juniors, it was a little bit more, it felt a little bit more professional because everyone had a coach, because not many juniors actually travel alone. So that was a, from that perspective, it was way different. And then the level of tennis is also just almost the complete opposite. Like everyone's fully grown, everyone's playing men's tennis, the game's a lot faster. It's
A different world. Okay, interesting. Another thing that I find, I listen to a lot of people who are in that sort of 300 to 800 in the world, whatever you want to call it, or 200 to 800 that play futures. You often hear this, and I don't know if it's very true or what, but they say that basically, whoever is able to stay fit and play many tournaments has got a bigger chance of making it in the futures and going into the challenges. In the sense that the ones that can afford a team already at that level and therefore can stay fitter longer have got much better chances to make it. And then there's the other ones who can't. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Yeah, for sure. It's 100% true. I think, I mean, you get guys traveling with a whole team every single day. They're doing fitness. Every single day you see them in the gym. They doing their long warm ups, their long cool downs. Everything is just super more structured. You can see the players that are there to come to win the tournament, and these that are just there to make another point or just stay on tour or whatever, if you know what I mean. But yes, I would for sure say that, because if you're not at a level where you can compete week in, week out, you anyways not going to get through futures. And yeah, I mean, that's just I think one of the aspects, but of course a very important one. Yeah.
Because obviously, if you can afford to eat well, sleep well, have a physio, and never get injured or get injured less often and be more rested, etc. You can play more of these tournaments, you can make it through easier, etc., etc.
Yeah,
Anyway,
exactly. You're also just in a little bit of a better mindset. I mean, I experienced it myself. If I lose a match and I'm alone on tour, I would get back to training in a day or two. Whereas if I had a coach, I would be back on court that afternoon, you know? It's just that motivation is just on another level if you've got someone standing behind you and helping you, and yeah.
So after your ankle, you recovered, and then did you continue with the what we would did you just continue with the tournaments again? The
Yeah,
what
so
happened then?
I played the end of that year. I played again of when I broke my ankle, and then in 2018 was my when I was 19 was a pretty good year. I played a lot of weeks. I probably played around 22 weeks that year, or maybe I think around there if I have to guess roughly.
When you say 22 weeks, you mean you were like on the road in tournaments.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, so I played a lot of tournaments. I played a lot of matches. It was tough for me to also get back into it. It took a whole bunch of tournaments to just get back into it, because it was a like, even confidence on the ankle, doesn't matter what you do, it's just like almost a mental thing. So, but then sort of middle of the year, I had a little bit of a breakthrough, and I made, I think, my first quarters. And from there, I made a couple more quarters, a couple semis and stuff like that, and quickly sort of built up my ranking till about 750 that year. Okay. That was just before that whole change in the ATP and ITF system.
Yes. Yeah. They changed the whole ranking system, I remember.
Yeah.
And it's still like that, really. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit different. They sort of semi-changed it back, but not 100% to what it was.
Not 100%, yeah. Wow, that's and right now, Lance, I mean, you've what are your plans now? I mean, what are you doing right now?
Well, I stopped probably a year and longer than a year and a half ago. I stopped in 2019 February, so I just had that 1 year actually of play, and then I stopped the following year. And I started coaching. Now I'm doing my own thing here in Somerset West, where I live. I'm also helping Anthony and them a little bit. I'm coaching there in the afternoons. So, I'm happy, and I'm glad that I'm still involved. I think it was a big emotional decision to stop, that I was almost put off a little bit by the sport. I'm actually just happy that I'm still involved and that I'm happy, you know, doing it. And I've actually got a way different goal now as to what I have.
That's great. I wanted to ask you, what made you decide to stop? Was there like a one morning you just woke up and decided, or was it a gradual thing?
I'm gonna give quite a long answer, but
no, that's
basically
fine.
What happened was so with the whole ITF change and everything, that was sort of one thing that set me back quite a lot, because from being someone that was seeded later in the futures tournaments, I went straight back to qualies because of the way the system worked, you know. I think I was in Tunisia at the time, and I was playing the tournaments, and it was just I was there alone again. I could never really travel with a coach, but the last year as well, because Lloyd started playing challenges. He needed a coach alone, and probably about four or five players quit or went to college. All of a sudden I was on my own, and we couldn't afford to travel one-on-one with a coach, you know? So I was sitting in Tunisia, and I was playing, and I was almost in such a bad space and stuff. And obviously me and Ant spoke over the phone every single day, but it's not really the same, you know. I speak to him and I'm super happy and positive and everything. And then I go out on court, and it's just so tough, you know. So then I texted, I remember telling my mom, like, because my mom's the one that supported me financially, you know. I never really spoke about financials or anything, but I thought, let me call my mom and just speak to her and hear like what's going on, because there were thoughts before of like maybe there's not going to be money for these tournaments and that tournaments and whatever. So I thought I'd just check, and my mom sort of gave me an idea of what it's looking like and how many tournaments I've got left, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she was supporting me for the whole time I played. And I thought to myself, like, if this is what I have left, I thought to myself, if this is what I've got left, how am I actually ridiculous to think that I'm going to be playing this year. So okay. When I got back to Cape Town, I went to go speak to Anthony and I said, listen, from my side, it's just not possible anymore, financially and everything.
Yeah.
And we had like a long discussion and like over weeks and everything. So
yeah,
it was like a really tough time at that stage. And, there was like a few big decisions to make and everything. And helped me a lot with making the decisions and stuff. But there was a point where I felt that I should have had a little bit more faith and said, okay, let me just carry on a couple of months where I don't go play tournaments and just train and see if someone wants to come on board or whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, it was so that was one of the reasons, was the ITF, and then obviously the whole financial aspect of everywhere I had to go, I had to travel alone because we couldn't afford a coach at the time. And it wasn't like I'm a top 300 player that really like can insist that I really need a coach. And then the other thing was I injured my hip as well, which also played a big role. But that's not one of the main reasons why I couldn't carry on. So it wasn't really it was more of a forced decision than my own decision, if I can put it that way. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, look, I mean, I think your story is probably so common amongst people, players that are trying to break through, you know, and doing the futures. It's it's extremely tough. It must be very, very also lonely, as you said. It's tough on many, many different levels, not only financially. So it's quite, I think, especially for young players and parents, etc. It's something that people have to consider, because it's an extremely, extremely tough sport. I mean, just to make it very brief, but if you had to, from your experience, give some suggestions to somebody who's a South African junior, who's doing really well, is doing well on the ITF junior circuit and wants to become pro. What would you say are the challenges, which we've already talked about, really, or what would you suggest him to do? What would you say to him or her?
If he's got the level and he meets the criteria that he has to for playing professionally, like if he achieves all the goals in the juniors, or even if he just starts, if he doesn't play juniors and he starts performing in futures and stuff, it's super tough because there's so many different aspects. There's financial aspects, there's physical, one of the biggest things is probably like the emotional side of things. So even if you've got all the physical, it doesn't help if the emotional side is not there. And so there's so many different things. But I think that a lot of people lost a little bit of hope in South Africa and feel like it's not really possible to make it out of here. So the only option is college, I think. I think that's how a lot of people feel, almost, if I can put it that way. But I mean, we've got someone right here in Cape Town that proved to us that it is possible out of Cape Town. So, I would say that if all the aspects fall in place, and okay, so let's say the guy's got like everything that he has to. He's got the level, he's got the skill, and all of this, but he doesn't have the financial side of things. I would say that that it is extremely important to try carry on and not just conclude on, okay, I have to go to college, I don't have money. But also, I know that there are, it is very tough, but I know that there are places that will support and stuff.
Okay.
or I mean, if they really have to. So I think
Yeah.
what I would say is, don't think that college is the only option. There is a way of playing out of South Africa, and there is hope. And it's just all the aspects must sort of connect with each other and work.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, that's extremely interesting because I think what you've said, and I have two boys, as you know, and they play TSA tournaments, and I speak to a lot of people, and that's and I'm also not South African, even though I've been here quite a few years, but that's the impression I get. It's like if somebody's good at tennis here as a junior, it's the discussion is automatically he's going to college. There's not really that thought process of, well, I mean, obviously it's incredibly hard, and I think everybody knows that, but they don't, it doesn't even, it's not a thought that comes, let's try it. Nobody even thinks like that. And I think that's quite surprising because, obviously there's a lot of talented kids here. Another thing I was thinking is obviously I think also the environment is extremely important, and maybe there is not, I'm not saying there aren't, there definitely are, and I'm sure Anthony Harris is one of them, but there aren't that many good environments for developing tennis players. There are some, but there aren't many. I don't know, that's my impression, and that is really, really important. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, for sure. If you just look at South Africa by itself, and you look where players are coming from and stuff, I think it's very quickly and clear to pinpoint exactly where all of our best players are coming from. And I think, first of all, it's none other than environment and someone that purely really has this massive dream and vision and goal of producing a player and totally believing he can do it, you know?
You're talking about Anthony Harris now.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
so and I think most of the people in South Africa don't have that vision and dream. And if they do, I don't really believe that a lot of people that say they do have the knowledge to do so, if I can put it that way. I think it's
Okay.
very important to be current on tour, to be seeing what's
Yes.
going on, to be seeing what the new game's like, to be seeing what routes to take, and to be actually be doing it, you know.
Yeah,
I think
very well
that's
said. Yeah.
also one of the most important things, because you can't just have an idea of what it is and then follow that idea. You must know exactly, I think, what to do and what steps to take. And then the other thing is being honest with all your students and
Yes.
telling them exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. No, very, very good, Lance. I really like what you said there. I think it's very, very interesting and important. Great. No, look, thanks a lot. I think you touched on some really, really interesting aspects and especially about junior and development. I don't think there's a lot of talk out there. But that was really, really interesting. As I told you, I've got this second part of my podcast, which is a mega rapid fire
Okay.
quiz. Are you ready? It's all
No,
over
not
the
really,
place.
but let's try. I'm
Not
quite a I always have to think about something, but so this is
No,
gonna
but
be a challenge.
just say the first thing that comes to mind, or if you want to elaborate, you can elaborate.
Perfect.
It doesn't really matter.
Right.
Okay, what's your very first memory of tennis?
Playing against a wall at my house.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you have to define to somebody who's never seen you what type of player you are, how would you describe yourself?
Big forehand, solid backhand.
Okay.
Yeah.
If there's a pro that resembles you or that you resemble, is there one out there that you would compare yourself to in style?
I think mostly Roger. I think we've got the same game style, playing with a forehand,
Okay.
one hand backhand,
Okay.
and yeah.
Okay, cool. What's your best shot?
Forehand.
Forehand.
Yeah.
Did you have a tennis idol growing up?
Rafa, actually, to be honest,
Oh,
I was a
okay.
big Rafa fan, yeah.
Are you lefty? No.
No, right. Right-hander.
Right, okay, now I thought so. Currently, any male or female player that you really like watching?
Lloyd, only Lloyd.
Okay,
Yeah.
excellent. If you have to list the big three, Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, from favorite to least favorite,
I think between Rafa and Roger, it's really tight, but I really like, I think at this stage, Roger, Rafa, and then Djoko. Yeah.
Which is the best match? This is a bit difficult one that you've ever seen. It can be at any level, like junior, club, pro, whatever.
The best match that I've ever seen. Oh wow, Lloyd was playing one match in Stellenbosch where he played a Spanish guy in the final. I forgot the guy's name, but the guy was around 200 at the time.
I saw that as well.
Yeah, and he beat him like one and love. But I mean,
Yeah.
so it's not like the most, it wasn't the most entertaining match, but for me it was just so crazy how for the hour that Lloyd played, he didn't once drop intensity or anything. So it was like, for me, well, from his side, obviously, the best match I've ever seen. It was just like ridiculous. I've never seen someone playing like that and just every single shot till
Yeah.
detail working, you know?
It was very one completely one-sided, I remember
Yeah.
it was, yeah.
And it's not like the other guy played bad.
Best tournament in the world.
Best tournament in the world, I think, is probably Australian Open.
Okay. Have you ever been there?
No,
No.
that's actually,
Okay.
I've never been in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite surface?
My favorite surface is hard court.
What strings and tension do you use?
I played with a Yonex string. And with a yellow Yonex string, the Poly Tour, I think it's
The
called the
Poly
Poly
Tour
Tour
Pro.
Pro, yeah.
Yeah.
And I strung at, depending on where I am, but on mostly like 47, 48.
Do you have an all-time favorite tennis racket?
The Yonex for sure.
Have you always played with Yonex?
No, I played with Wilson for most of my life, but when I
Okay.
moved over to Yonex, that was the best.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you keep your old rackets?
I try to, but every now and then I get home and my mom's busy giving it away. So I try
Okay.
to sometimes, but it's
Okay.
tough, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one's a bit different. You have to book a restaurant and you can only invite three players. They can be any era, male or female. Which restaurant do you book and who do you invite?
Do they have to be players or
They have to be professional players, yeah.
professional players? Well, that would probably be Lloyd, Kyrgios. Not because I like, I think Kyrgios just because I would be quite entertained with what he has to say around the table.
Okay.
And then the other one would be the other one would be Roger.
Roger. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you quite are you good friends with Lloyd? Are you
Yeah. Yeah, we're
still
pretty
okay?
good friends. Yeah.
Good friends.
We
Oh, and you haven't told me which restaurant you would book.
Oh, which restaurant? Well, you pro no, you I don't know if you'll know it. There's a restaurant here in Somerset West called Casa Valdez.
Yes, I
You
know.
must go there. Have you been there?
It's
Yeah,
good.
it's awesome. Yes, it's the best place for me. I know
Yeah.
the owner pretty well, but I love to go there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Do you like cooking?
No. I'm very bad
No.
at cooking, to be quite honest with you.
Your favorite food?
Pasta, spaghetti
Pasta.
bolognese. Yeah.
Okay. Favorite pizza topping?
It's strange because I like Hawaiian almost the most, but people tell me I'm weird for putting pineapple with meat. But yeah, Hawaiian, whatever.
Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Okay,
We'll go with Hawaiian.
I'm going to end this interview right now. No. No, I'm joking. Are you more tea or coffee?
Coffee, for sure.
Coffee. If you drink, what's your favorite cocktail?
I don't really drink cocktails. And lately, I also don't really drink alcohol anymore, but I really still love beer. So if I can,
Okay.
the one that tastes the most like a normal beer is probably that new Heineken Free. I don't know if you
Oh
know
yeah,
that.
that's excellent. I actually tried it recently. It's
It
it
tastes the
tastes like a
most like
beer, which
yeah
is
yeah
incredible.
yeah
The fa your Do you have a favorite band or singer? Or
Well,
what
not
music do
really.
you like?
I actually don't really listen to much music anymore, but I used to, sure, I used to have a bunch of people. I used to listen to like a lot of like DJ music, like house and stuff, but not anymore. And then I started listening to rap. But at the moment, I would probably say, okay, well, if I can go back, I think Drake was one of my favorites. Yeah.
Okay, right. Have you got a favorite movie?
A favorite movie. Sure, I'm not very big on movies. I'm a little bit boring in that side as well. But there's oh like American Sniper, I think, was one of my favorites. Then there was another one just like American Sniper, but I forgot the name now. But I really like comedies and then true life stories and documentaries. So
Okay.
a lot of those, yeah.
Do you have a hobby that maybe, well, do you have any hobbies, or do you have a hobby that's a bit strange or different?
For a tennis player, yes, because I ride a little bit of motocross and we always
Okay.
told to stay away from dangerous and extreme sports. So I think in that sense, it's different. But
Okay.
in general, I think it's a pretty normal hobby. But I really love motocross and also mountain biking.
Okay,
Yeah.
cool. Are you This is going to be difficult because you're from Cape Town. If you have to choose sea, city, mountain, or countryside, which one do you prefer?
A year ago it was only sea, but now it's more countryside.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you change? What happened?
I don't know. I think I was always so used to like the busy city life. I couldn't imagine anything else, and everything was always busy, and it was fast, and I was traveling. And now it's almost like I've got way more time to think about everything and stuff, and I really started enjoying going away for weekends, just going to a place where everything's just more, way more quiet and not so busy.
Are you superstitious? A lot of tennis players are.
Yes, very.
You are, really? When you
Yes.
play or played, did you do anything like Nadal, who puts his bottles, all in a certain place, or did you do anything strange,
Yeah,
or?
There were quite a bunch of things which I was like extremely OCD about, but one of the examples that I can give you was I could never put on socks if I didn't shower first. So like if I ever took off my shoes and I take off my socks, then I would have to shower before I put on. I couldn't put my foot against the ground and then put on a new sock or whatever. It would always feel like as if
Okay,
something
so
was
you're
cut off.
definitely a tennis player. Do you have a favorite country that you visited? Can't be your can't be South Africa, can't be your home country.
Oh, damn. Okay. No, so I think my most favorite country was probably Holland. And
okay.
Yeah, I think Holland, Spain was also pretty nice. So it's between Holland and Spain. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Would you say tennis is the most difficult sport in the world?
To make a career out of it, yes, for sure. I 100% believe that. If you just go look at all the aspects, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's the hardest sport to just play in general. If I can,
okay.
Maybe it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. And in 30 years' time, 2050, do you think tennis will look very different?
Maybe slightly, but I don't think it will differ much from the level it's at now. I don't think the speed will get much faster or the game will get much faster. No.
Okay. A lot of people think like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're nearly finished. This one, I want you to complete your perfect tennis player all time. It can be any era, any or male or female. It doesn't matter. Let's start with the serve.
Who's the best? Who has the best serve?
If you have to choose your own perfect tennis player.
Yeah. Oh, so like for example, like Isner serve, Rogers for
exactly.
Like
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Sure. I think I would really want to have Lloyd serve, because I experienced it in person a lot. So Lloyd serve,
return
Djokovic for sure.
Forehand,
either Monfils or Jack Sock. I think Monfils.
Backhand.
Can I choose another player, like the same player or not?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Backhand will be
Djokovic. Volley.
Volley. Roger.
This is a bit difficult. Drop shot. Yeah.
Drop shot will be... Wait, who did I watch the other day? What that was like? Drop shotting so much. Drop shot will be Dustin Brown.
Okay, yeah, that's
or
good.
Or Jack Sock, one of the two.
Movement.
Movement will be team.
Mentality.
Andy Murray.
Okay. Touch feel.
Touch and feel will, I mean, Roger is just, yeah, Roger for sure. He's just next level.
And last one, personality on court and off court. Personality.
Personality on court and off court. Sure, that's tough.
Just in general, personality.
Just in general. I don't know. I like Andy Murray a lot. For me, he's very cool.
Okay.
I've spoken to him also a little bit. But I think, I think a lot of people also think on court he's a little bit of a... But I think he's also very serious and superstitious. I don't know. But he's a super nice guy off court and very social. And, yeah.
Okay. Great. Last one. And then we finished. To finish off... it doesn't have to be a serious or personal one, but ask yourself a question and answer it.
Yeah. Must I ask myself any question?
Exactly. It can be anything.
Okay. Wait, let me just think. Let me just think for a second. where do I see myself in 10 years?
Okay.
Can I ask that?
Sure. It can be anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So I see myself still here in South Africa. working with Ant and them, and also helping on his dream also to succeed, and also my dream to get our junior players to compete at an international level and have a little bit more hope to try play on the pro circuit.
Okay, fantastic. That's a great question. And I guess that's your we go through many goals in our life, and sounds like you've got a clear goal.
Yeah, for sure. Now that I'm here and everything, and it's a little bit more slowed down, I've for sure got a new goal, and I think that I can really achieve it. Yeah.
Okay, Lance, great. Thanks a lot. Maybe I've kept you a bit too long, but I thought it was really interesting. And I've seen you play many times, but we've never really spoke to each other.
Yeah.
But it was really nice to have you, and I really liked it. Yeah. And anyway, I will see you soon, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Perfect. Keep well. Thanks so much for all the questions and everything. I really appreciate it. And it's fun answering everything. And thanks for inviting me.
Cool. Okay. Thanks, Lance.
All right. Keep well.
Ciao. Bye. You too. Bye.